Hello and welcome back to the Thundersticks podcast. I'm your host Ben Kreider, and today I'm going to be talking about the Thunder versus Warriors game, who stood out from that one, and the main takeaways. I'm also going to be talking about Trey Mann and his movement to the OKC Blue, potentially what that could mean for some of the other guards as well. And I'm also going to be bringing up the Thunder's upcoming game against the LA Clippers. And like always, guys, I'm going to be giving you a very special offer from my good friends over at DraftKings Sportsbook, so you do not want to miss out on that. But first, just starting off with the Golden State Warriors game. This game happened on Saturday. I know I'm getting it out a little bit late, so I might cut it a bit briefer than usual summaries, because I know you guys probably know what happened. But you enter this one. The first game they had against the Warriors was very, very exciting. Down to the wire, single digits for most of the game. And then you obviously had the outburst from Steph Curry. They kind of sealed the deal in the fourth quarter. But this was one of their better games, and it actually was the best game they had at that point in the season. So they come into this one, coming off a win. And you're thinking, hey, maybe the Thunder can build up a two-game win streak. The Warriors, they were no joke. I mean, they finished the game after the Thunder game. They were 4-0. That was number one in the league. Only one other team was 4-0. There was one team that was 3-0. They got wiped. They lost their last game, so they're coming out with a loss. Thunder coming in with a win. Maybe you keep that momentum going, and you can steer things into the right direction. And when you look at the injury report, it wasn't like the Thunder were losing anybody. I mean, the only people they were losing were really the G League guys, which I'll be talking about. And then for the Warriors, they had James Wiseman not really out there. Klay Thompson, like always, he wasn't in the rotation. And you had Jonathan Kuminga, who was active in this game and did get some time, but he hadn't played to this point. And even with that, it's kind of limited minutes with him. So they were still damaged, not like with inflicting wounds, because they've kind of dealt with all this up until this game. But it still could hurt you in the grand scheme of things. Just look at the Lakers game. You take LeBron out, you think you're fine with Russ and AD. That was not the case in that contest. So anything could really happen. But the Thunder start out, and they were kind of teetering with that single possession deficit for the majority of the first. I'd say maybe the first 5-6 minutes, that's where you saw this, where it was kind of a jousting match, and it wasn't a major deal. Like, the Warriors, they were out and about, they were getting really good inside looks. I think Draymond Green was kind of the main beneficiary. You just dump it inside. He was backing it down on Darius Bazley, just getting shots off the glass and such. For Thunder, it was not like that, but they were still hanging around, which is what you need against a team like Golden State. But once you hit the 7-minute mark in the quarter, they just got completely stonewalled. They could not hit a shot to save their life. They went 1 of 10 in a span of 5 minutes. So from the 7-minute mark to the 2-minute warning, just 1 of 10. That is absolutely terrible. And it kind of just drained the life out of the Thunder, because they were taking shot after shot. And it wasn't like inside shots where you just weren't getting the bounce. They were out and about at the perimeter. 9 of those 10 shots came from distance, and they just were not falling. And when you keep getting those looks from downtown, and when the Warriors keep testing you and you can't find success, that's just going to mentally exhaust you. And that's what was happening to them. And because of it, the Warriors were able to reap their benefits. And it wasn't actually that big. You'd think, hey, if they're 1 of 10, they're going to be doing pretty damn bad. Well, they got to the free throw line. They hit both their free throws. Lu Dort hit a 24-footer. To get them 5 points in that span. And Golden State only put up 10. So it's like a 7-8 point lead. But the big deal is they weren't on this seal of a single possession anymore. So they were kind of out and about, had free reins of the situation. And they were able to have a 28-20 lead through one. And the big thing from this quarter was just the shooting percentages. The Thunder could not get anything to roll in. I talked about the 1 of 10 stretch. Outside of that, it really was not all that bad. They shot 7 of 10 outside of those 5 minutes, but still, as a collective, that's 38.1%, 8 of 20 overall. And then when you look at what they did from 3, it was even worse. They fell off a cliff. It didn't matter if it was in that 5-minute zone or not. They went 1 of 11, and that's not really going to get you anywhere. And when you look at the flip side of things, Steph Curry was not looking good. That's the guy that you'd expect to kind of gun out and start getting points in bunches. Did not do that. However, they had somebody else in Draymond Green. I talked about how he was just hitting shot after shot on Darius Baisley to open the contest. He even popped out to the corner for a couple of jumpers, and Baze just could not handle him. So he had 11 points through the first 12 minutes, and he kind of paved the way for what the Warriors were doing. They were shooting 44% overall, and then from three, they weren't overly impressive. They shot 4 of 13, but that's still much, much better than what the Thunder were doing at a 1 of 11 slate. But when you move on to that second quarter, just more punches kept rolling in for the Warriors. These were big. They got an opening run. Moses Moody hit a three. I think there was a layup in there. And then also a mid-range from Otto Porter Jr. Got him a 7-0 stretch and got them up 35-20 in the first 2 minutes of the frame. And that's dangerous. That's like a danger zone for the Thunder. You cannot go down 15 points after 14 minutes. And it's kind of a knockdown. You know, you got to pick yourself back up. If they keep piling on those points, might consider it a knockout and say this one could be over already. But they were not able to do that. The Warriors kind of quit rolling out those punches, and the Thunder had a chance to come back because Golden State went 1 of 9 through that 6 minute mark. You know, I guess it was a 4 minute stretch because you go from the 10 minute mark to the 6 minute mark. 1 of 9. That's what the Thunder were doing earlier in the first, and that's kind of how the Warriors were able to find themselves in a 15 point lead, get that real footing in the contest. And the Thunder, with that chance, they really didn't do anything. They kind of stayed on that mat, only were able to scrap up 7 points. So it was 37-27 after that major scuffle. So the Warriors kind of came out of that encounter pretty damn clean. And then they go right back to just scoring in bunches. Andrew Wiggins hit 2 consecutive triples. And then he also had an alley-oop jam mixed in there. Led a 14-7 run by the 2 minute warning. And OKC had a couple of shots that they were making at the end of things. Biggest moment, 27-foot buzzer beater from SGA. But that was it. They were still down double digits. It was 55-44 by halftime. And honestly, all things considered, the Thunder having 44 points in the first half was nothing short of a miracle because they could not get anything to go in for the first quarter. Same goes with the second. They didn't even have 30 points in the game until 5 minutes were left in the half. So it was pretty damn ugly. And I think the biggest source of that was just how they were handling the basketball. They almost had double the turnovers as they did assists. It was 9-5 in that ratio. And they shot 4 of 18 from downtown. So shots couldn't roll in, and then obviously you're going to give out free possessions to the Warriors. They'll take that in fast break and kill you pretty much every single time. And when you look at what the Warriors were doing, they weren't shooting overly impressive. You know, when you look at what the Lakers were doing, I guess that's a good example. They were shooting above 60% in their blowout half against the Thunder in the last game. The Warriors were only shooting 45.8%, and the Thunder were shooting a clean 40%. In this first half. But the big deal was from three, they shot 8 of 23 from there, and then they had two main guys. Draymond had 14 by halftime, and Andrew Wiggins, he used that major push to have 11 for himself. Steph Curry wasn't on the board really at all. He only had 2 shots go in, 5 points and 3 assists. That was a stat line for him, so the door would still be open in terms of that, because you know when Steph Curry's on, he's going to be on the entire night. It's just a matter of when he gets hot in that game. With Draymond and Andrew Wiggins, we know they are both very, very flaky. So even down 11, you could try to position yourself back in, barring Curry just erupts. And the Thunder got a free basket to begin the half. They had Jeremiah Robinson-Earl on a backdoor cut. Beautiful layup there. But then Steph Curry did exactly what the Thunder were dreading, and that was just getting into his zone, just taking shots from downtown. Doesn't matter how many people is in front of him, you know, he's going to hit the jumper regardless. He hits 3 triples in the Warriors' first 4 shots, and the Thunder couldn't do much about it. To make it even worse, when Curry was making shots, it was trickling down the depth chart. Andrew Wiggins hit a 3 almost right after Curry's tangent, and then they had an 18-9 run in the blink of an eye. So they're up 20 points, and they just held onto it for the entirety of the third quarter. You know, the Thunder, they were trying to chip away at it, but it just didn't happen for them. The buckets were not going in, and they only had 58 points by the end of the third quarter. It was 82-58, and you're just kind of sitting there saying, you know, what is going on with this offense? Because Golden State, they didn't really have it completely together in the first half. They did have those splurges of buckets, though, that kind of held them together. They had an excellent third. They shot 7 of 14 from 3. OKC, on the other hand, though, they actually kind of declined a bit when it came to shooting in the second half, at least to start it. They went 1 of 11 from 3. And they got outscored by Steph Curry single-handedly. So Curry had 15 points, and OKC only had 14 in the third quarter. And Curry, he made all his shots from three. He went 5 of 10 overall, but he went 5 of 8 from beyond the arc. For the Thunder, they thought they were going to, you know, out-battle Steph Curry. That's never going to happen, by the way. And they just fell flat on their face. So one guy just outscores them in all. You know, that's going to put them over that 20-point threshold. And going into that fourth quarter, it was kind of over. And Mark Daigneault threw out the flag. He didn't put SGA in. Lou Dort was out of action. It was more or less about putting in the bench guys and giving them some reps. So Alexei Pokuševski and Ty Jerome got to play the entire 12 minutes in the quarter. And OKC actually outscored the Warriors in this quarter 24-21. Big deal. Gabriel Deck, he had 9 points in 7 minutes, didn't miss a shot, went 3 of 3. One of those shots was from distance, and then he hit both attempts at the foul line. And then Alexei Pokuševski had 7 points for himself as well. So boost of production, I guess that's kind of a high note, but it wasn't going to make any sort of impact on this game. Golden State takes it 103-82. They move on from this game 5-1 on the year. And for the Thunder, complete opposite side of the script at 1-5. And I'm going to break down all the numbers from this contest in a second. But first, I want to let you guys know about a really good deal going on at my good friends over at DraftKings Sportsbook. The NBA is back, and at DraftKings Sportsbook, an authorized sports betting partner of the NBA, the key to victory is a strong starting five. New customers can bet just $5 on any NBA team to win their game, and if they do, you win $200 in free bets. To make it even better, you guys can make same-game parlays at DraftKings Sportsbook. Here's what you have to do. Go ahead and download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code TBPN. Bet just $5 on any NBA team to win their game and win $200 in free bets if they win. You win with promo code TBPN this week at DraftKings Sportsbook, an authorized sports betting partner of the NBA. Must be 21 or older in New Jersey, Indiana, or Pennsylvania only. New customers only. Minimum $5 deposit and $1 wager required. One per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. And if you have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER. But guys, moving on to the actual stats from this game, it was pretty damn ugly for the Thunder. They shot 35.8% in the game, and when you look at what they were doing in the second half, it was closer to 30%. They barely even grazed 30% in the second. That's one you can't even make sound good, right? Like 30% is the lowest of the low. That's actual YMCA numbers, like I was talking about earlier, but it was bad. And then when you move out to the three-point arc, it got even worse. 8 of 39 from there, that's 20.8%, and the ball handling was out of control. 16 turnovers to 14 assists. Yeah, they ramped up the passing in the second half, but it was really not even that good, and that one either. And then for Golden State, all they had to do was just sit where they're comfortable at, and that's the three-point line. They have so many good shooters on this team. They got Curry, they got Jordan Poole. Klay Thompson's not on the team, but it didn't matter in this one. Draymond was hitting jumpers. Andrew Wiggins was out and about from there. And they just took shot after shot. They had 92 total field goals in this game. 52 of them came from downtown. That's pretty damn close to 60% of their shots. I think it's 56 or 58%, one of those two. And they hit 21 of those 52 tries. So they were around 40% from there. 63 points picked up from the three-point arc alone. And they were passing it like crazy. 30 assists in the game. Only had 15 turnovers for them. And they came out on top in a major way. Steph Curry, no surprise, he led the team in scoring, had 20 points, which how it looked in the third quarter where he dropped 15 by himself, you would think he exploded for 50 points, but he was locked down in the other three quarters. Granted, he wasn't looking to shoot in those quarters, but, you know, he didn't go off like many would have expected him to. So he got his 20 points going 7 of 16. All but one of those makes came from downtown. He shot 6 of 13 from beyond the arc. Picked up 5 rebounds and 6 assists in it as well. Gotta kind of remember, you know, he had that major third quarter. Didn't have to play in the fourth just due to the situation. Right behind him, though, you got 3 different guys who dropped 14. Draymond had all 14 of his in the first half. He was just taking it right to Darius Baisley, honestly. 6 of 8 from the floor. Most of that came around the paint. He did have one make from downtown. And he almost had a triple-double because he had 11 rebounds and 8 assists. Andrew Wiggins slowed down in the second half as well. Had the 14 points. First half, only got 3 in the second. So he got 14 points going 5 of 13. 4 of 5 from 3, though. Had 2 rebounds. And then you had Jordan Poole, who kind of got to play in all the different scenarios. He can work with the starting unit, the bench, fourth quarter. Didn't really matter in this one. He picked up his 14 points, going 6 of 15, 2 of 6 from downtown, and had 4 assists. No major production from the bench in this one, I'd say. Otto Porter Jr. had 10 points, going 4 of 6. I didn't really love anybody else from this group, though. Interesting breakthrough. Jonathan Kuminga did get to play in this game, though. And whenever I was kind of compiling, important matchups or fun matchups to watch out for before the season started, I actually had Golden State up here for when they came to town. And then also this one, because you got Curry. And then you got to see Moses Moody and Jonathan Kuminga. Jonathan Kuminga barely played. He only had 6 minutes, and they all came in the fourth quarter. His role was nothing. You couldn't take any aspect of the night away with Kuminga because he was just out there sitting at the corner in the wing, went 1 of 4 overall, hit 1 of 3 triples. So he had 3 rebounds, but that was legit it. And then Moses Moody, he did have one of those really clean threes. I think it was in the third quarter, but he shot 2 of 7, 1 of 5 from distance, and just had 6 points on the game. So the rookies were not all that impressive in this one, but you look at what the Thunder were doing, they weren't very impressive either. SGA was a leader in scoring for the Thunder. He only had 15 points, though, and this draws back to what was going on with Houston, where SGA was the leader, but it was only like 13, 14 points for him. A lot of it has to do with the zone defense and how you play on screens. If you're going to force people to kick it out to 3, that's a success, especially when SGA is the guy driving inside. So you force him to kick out, and you're going to be good. That's what they did. He shot 6 of 14 overall in this game. Only had 2 assists to go with it because no one was hitting their shots. And then you look at what he was doing as a shooter. He went 2 of 7 from 3. And this is the game changer. I've mentioned it so many times on this podcast. When SGA gets rolling from downtown, specifically on his step back jumper, it's very hard to contain him. Him as a 3-level scorer is like a superstar. We have seen it. That's how they beat the Lakers, because he could just step back over and over again, kept hitting, and then he could drive inside and pick up 2 any way he wanted as well. He couldn't do it in this game, and that's why he got slowed down so much, and that's why the Thunder as a whole kind of did end up easing on the gas tank just a little bit. Lu Dort had 14 points in this one. He had 1 rebound and 1 assist. His primary role against these superstar teams has to come down to locking up the star. Steph Curry kind of outclassed him, and it wasn't like it was a man-to-man coverage the entire time, so you can't put it all on Lu Dort. But Steph Curry was just nailing shots. And some of them, granted, were very, very tough. But Steph Curry, when he is feeling it, he's feeling it. Big thing with Dort, though, that he can control is his offensive production. especially when you look at him as a three-point shooter. He shot 2 of 6 from three. He really hasn't had that major catch-and-shoot game yet this year where you look at him and you just know the shot's going in. That's the only thing you could talk about during the preseason. I think that's kind of been wiped through 6 games thus far in the year. So it was just tough for him. He still did get up there, though, with the 14 points. And the only other scorer to get double digits was Josh Giddey with 10 points. I think he might have been the best player on the Thunder's roster in Saturday's game because he did have the 10 points, 4 rebounds, and 6 assists in 28 minutes. Nobody could pass the ball except for Giddey, honestly, because you look at SGA as the true number one, of course. He only puts up 2 assists. And that's about all you're going to do. Ty Jerome had 3 assists. That was the second best on this team. And then you look at it at face value. They only had 14 assists anyway. So just getting 6 is pretty huge in terms of the distribution. But he was great when it came to driving inside. I love him as a pick and roll player. He had 1 hezzy where he was driving left. Pops a moving hezzy. Gets 2 guys going. You got, I think it's a Miami set. I don't know what it is. But there's a back screen going on. SGA setting it. And then there's Jeremiah Robinson Earl driving inside. So you take it from a 3-on-3 situation, pops the hezzy, gets both guys up in the air off of it, and then you got SGA with the screen. That's going to catch him up. It's a 1-on-2 situation. Giddey's on the left side. Jeremiah Robinson Earl's on the right. And Andrew Wiggins is right on the basket. Just elevates and then makes a beautiful just dish midair to Robinson Earl for a layup. That was a play that stood out to me. And he also had another one where he was like bobbling a catch and he was still able to make a really crisp pass off whenever the pressure came to him. So he's a really fluid passer as well as a finisher. He didn't even have to look at the three in this one. He shanked both threes, so I guess he technically did. But the main deal is him with his floaters. And he got a bank shot off with one of them in this game. Also just a true floater too. But yeah, he was probably the one guy who I don't think changed drastically from last game to this one. Ty Jerome and Alexei Pokuševski, you could say they did better, but they were in much different situations. Ty Jerome and Poku have kind of been on the outside looking in. I'd say Ty more than Poku because Ty just hasn't played. But they both got to play in the fourth like I talked about. They both finished with 19 minutes in this one. And Jerome was a nice touch to the game. He shot 2 of 3 from downtown. Or I guess he hit 2 of his 3 made shots from distance to get 8 points. And then he also had 3 assists and 2 steals. Poku, he was also good as well. 7 points all coming in that fourth quarter. But he had 9 rebounds to go along with it and had a block. Big takeaway, though, with Jerome and Poku getting those minutes, you had to shave it off of somebody else. It's a lot simpler when you look at the front court because Derek Favors only played 10 minutes. It's a blowout. You're not going to play the 30-year-old for no reason. Give it to Poku. Let him kind of get more time on the court. I think it's a bit more complex when you look at what went on with Ty Jerome because we know that the guard unit is just jammed with different players. The only real contest you would have for this one would have been Teo or Ty. They went Ty really for the first time in the season in this game. So Jerome played 19. Maladone played 8. So he kind of got the short end of the stick. I'm kind of okay with that though because Teo, he hasn't been just this consistent 6-man like maybe we thought he would have been. Jerome was good, though, and now you got an even more perplexing situation because Jerome just came off a good game, but you know Teo also has some juice in himself as well, so will be a toss-up probably heading into the LA Clippers game. Darius Bazley underperformed, and this is a little bit annoying, right, because he has a 20-point game. I think he had 8 rebounds to go along with it against LA. Had that final dunk, had the first 8 points for the Thunder. Like, he was consistent. Outside of the 2 backboard threes he had, he was great. He might have been the Thunder's second-best player, honestly. But he didn't follow it up well at all. He went right back to his habits of not being able to hit from 3. He went 0 of 5, went 1 of 7 overall. And it's not like he didn't play much. Like, he was given an ample amount of minutes. He got to play 27 minutes in this one. And he only got 5 points and 8 rebounds off of it. So You didn't see him as a three-level scorer when he's not able to hit threes. He's just not really a major piece for you. So consistency has really just been the major issue with Baze to this point in his season, career, whatever you want to call it, and it's shown up again in year number three. So hopefully that was just a bit of an outlier in terms of his production. Now, you look at his track record, I don't think it is, but you just got to hold out hope because he is the starter. We'll see if there's a transaction or some major movement, but based on how Poku has kind of been ousted a little bit, I don't know if Bazley is going to be moving to the bench really anytime soon. You kind of always have to keep that in the back of your head, though, because the rotation is constantly shifting, and that is something that we know based on some of the transactions from this week. Now, Vit Krejci got assigned to the OKC Blue. Briefly mentioned it on the pod last week. This is no surprise. That's kind of what was expected of him, even when he signed the three-year contract, because he hasn't played. He had a torn ACL he suffered in September of 2020. He's got to get some in-game action, and he's a player who has a pretty fun skill set. You're not going to get the true value out of that unless you're putting him in the G League, because he won't get the light of day, I'd say, with the NBA. He's going to get the same treatment where he's getting 8-9 minutes like a Poku. Might shoot up to 17 every once in a while, but he hasn't even earned his stripes at all yet, because he hasn't played professionally, at least at the NBA level. Got a score once, so I guess, you know what, he has technically played two games, but not really any significant minutes yet. He's going to get real minutes with the Blue. They start on October 5th, and they will also have some extra ammunition with first-round selection Trey Mann. OKC decided to put Poku in the Blues farm system last season was a major payoff for the number 17 pick. The number 18 pick of this year's draft is going right back in that pool, and they're hoping they can get the exact same success. And he's a type of player who can get serious buckets in a short amount of time, so I really like the fit with him in the OKC Blues system. Also have to remember, like, the Thunder, they already have SGA, they have Tao, they have Ty, they have Lou. They just have too many guards right now. So Trey Mann, even though you highly coveted him and you decided to take him at pick number 18, you would never be able to play him to his full value with the OKC Thunder. And Mark Daigneault has talked about this. Even though he's assigned to the Blue, he'll probably be with the Thunder a decent amount of the time, because the Paycom Center is actually going to be hosting the Blue games and the Thunder games this year. He didn't say that, you know, same game performances will be happening where, like, you play 30 minutes with the Blue and play 10 with the Thunder, because you got to talk kind of with the medical team. But maybe playing with the Blue, getting recalled to the Thunder and sitting on the sideline could be something that you see a decent amount of times during the course of the season. But this was a move that kind of sucks, but it almost needed to happen because you were just tied up too far. And if you wanted to go to the bottom of the totem pole, maybe it was Ty Jerome. Jerome was already with the Blue. He doesn't need to be playing with the Blue because he's an NBA level talent. And I'd say with Tao, the exact same thing. Like, he didn't play with the Blue, but he led the team in minutes last year, and he was one of the lone bright spots, I guess you could call it. So you can't put him there either. With Trey Mann, he's deserving of getting NBA minutes with the Thunder. Really, based on the situation they have, it should amplify his reps. But they already have too many guards, and Daigneault mentioned it. Like, even before the regular season started, they talked about Trey going to the G League, and he must have been on board with it, because look at where we are now. He's with the OKC Blue. And while the Thunder go on their road game stand, West Coast, they've just played the Warriors, they're going to play the Clippers, Trey Mann will be with the Blue, training with them. So I'll be talking more about that situation probably in the next couple of days. I said I was going to do an OKC Blue-related pod 2 days ago. I was not able to do that, sadly. I apologize, but I still got all the content from that one kind of in my back pocket right now, just waiting to drop it, probably after the LA Clippers recap for tomorrow. So I'll talk about Trey Mann, I'll talk about Vit, talk about everybody on this Blue team, and maybe what to expect from them as the season tips off on the 5th. But I want to talk about a game the Thunder will be facing tonight at 9:30 Central Standard Time. First really, really late game we're going to have on the schedule. Thought the Warriors game would have been one. Nope. Even though it was in San Fran, they decided to keep it around 7 to 7:30. This is a 9:30 tip. So you will probably be up till like 12 in the morning if you want to watch the full length of this one. And this is an intriguing matchup because the Thunder, we know their situation. They're 1-5. They are looking to tank. The Clippers, they're not looking to tank. They're actually looking to contend. Now, Kawhi, he suffered his season-ending injury over the summer. So they only have Paul George, and they got other pieces like Reggie Jackson and such. But they're not at their true form right now. And even though they've had some very impressive performances, if you check the standings, you would never know. They're 1-4 right now, and they're at the bottom of the barrel. If you're a tankathon guy, if you spin the wheel like 5 times a day, chances are you're going to find OKC with the top 2 picks. How is that? OKC, they could be 1 or 2. Doesn't matter. LA, they are in the lottery discussion, and due to the Paul George trade, they gave away an unprotected 2022 pick to the Thunder. So the Thunder have full control of LA's board come draft night. Kind of scary looking at what they're at right now, 1-4. Got to keep in mind, it's not like the Clippers have been having cupcake games and just been blowing them. They've been playing true competitions the entire 5 games. But, you know, you want to make sure they're getting as many losses as possible. So if you're on this tanking boat and you always want the Thunder to be losing, you know, they're inexperienced. They're going to pick up losses along the way. But this is one game where you want to pick the Thunder to win this. You need them to win because it's going to help the odds for the Clippers pick, and potentially, you know, when it comes down to the wire, a game or two, sending you beyond like the 10 seed or the 11 seed, they might fall out and they might become a serious lottery threat due to the reform that they've had in place. Because I look at the Clippers team now, I don't see them as really a top 6 or 7 team. I think they're probably going to have to work into the play-in. And I talked about it actually when we were discussing draft picks during the summer on this podcast, but I genuinely think that's where they're going to be at because Kawhi is out. Paul George has played at NBA levels or MVP levels to this point. He's coming fresh off a 42-point game where they lost to the Trailblazers. 42 points and 8 rebounds for him. He went 15 of 24 in that game. And then he also had a 41-point game in his second game of the season against the Grizzlies. 41 points with 10 rebounds and 4 assists. So he's been a one-man band. He's jacking up a ton of shots per game. He's averaging over 20 a contest right now. So if you're looking to limit the main source, you're going right to Paul George and you're going to force a double team because you'd be fine letting guys like Reggie Jackson spur on some points. Hell, he looked great in the playoffs, but continue to test him, just like what teams have been doing with SGA. Get the ball out of the number one's hands and force the other people to make decisions for themselves. And due to the formula that we've seen, that's why the Clippers are at 1-4 currently. So, you know, I'm not going to slide them. They still have some very good players on their roster. Like I talked about, Reggie's averaging 14. Luke Kennard, surprisingly, is averaging 12.4. Eric Bledsoe, can never forget about him. He's still chalking up double digits a game. They have a couple players out for the contest, though. Serge Ibaka has been ruled out. Same goes with Marcus Morris. They have a weakened front court. I still like the front court matchup for the Clippers more than the Thunder, obviously. They have Ivaka Zubac, who is really just a back-to-basket big. That is the main problem for the Thunder. And then Isaiah Hartenstein as well, who he's not bad. He's kind of just that average, once again, back-to-basket big that you can employ on your team. So two of those guys, I don't think they're going to overwhelm the Thunder at all. The main thing is just what Paul George does, because if he spreads his wings, it will be an issue for the Thunder. Now, when you look at the Thunder currently, they do have an injury report that's you know, not as easy as it has been in the past. You know, when we talk about the injury report, it's been so clean cut for the Thunder. It's literally been Vit Krejci or Trey Mann because they're with the blue. And then same goes with guys like Aaron Wiggins and Paul Watson Jr. because they're just not available for play. Now, there's multiple different players out. On top of those 3-4 guys, Lu Dort has been ruled out with a shoulder injury. And Gabrielle Deck might also be out with a heel injury for himself. So with Deck, I don't really think it has many implications, but if Dort is out, this is a game where you're going to be able to see all the different rookies, or not even rookies, just the young guys at the guard positions finally get their shot. And maybe, just maybe, Josh Giddey gets to take on Paul George, which would be a very, very fun storyline. You know, it's going to happen probably because Dort is out. We'll see him on multiple reps. But is it going to be a man-to-man where he's always on him? Or will we see some trade-offs where maybe you're going to see some other players tossed into the mix, like a Kenrich Williams or something like that? Because he probably would be the most surefire defender to place on a guy like Paul George. I really want to hone in, though, on Théo and Ty, because I do think they are going to get a lot more looks now with Lu Dort out of the rotation. And it still might pull some numbers for some other youngsters to get time. Maybe Isaiah Roby working at the three again. Jeremiah Robinson Earl could get some time tapped down there. We'll have to check the dominoes that will fall. I think one also tiny mention for the Clippers that, you know, probably doesn't matter on the grand scheme of things because it is one of those like Krejci or like Paul Watson injury report lines. But two different players will also be out for them. You have Keon Johnson, one guy that they actually traded up to select in the draft. He's going to be with the Agua Caliente Clippers in the G League right now, so he's not going to play. And then Jason Preston also will be out. So two rookies from their side will be out, and then you got guys like Serge Ibaka who will be out from time, so that's going to hurt them. And then for the Thunder, they also have that major wound in Lu Dort, and then kind of spreads out to a couple others as well. So this is kind of like the Lakers game where you look at it and, you know, the advantage is not going to be in the Thunder side. Like, you check ESPN's prediction report, which I don't give a damn about what they say, at least for the prediction report, because I've seen some things college football wise. They don't let the Cowboys get any breathing room. They play against Kansas, you know, 70% chance. You're considering this matchup kind of similar to that? Absolutely not. I don't want to hear anything about that. But, yeah, you know, they're giving an 80.2% shot in this one. I think it's closer to like 60-40. I think this is one the Thunder could steal. You know, they have to make sure that Paul George is clamped up, but it's just like the LA matchup where, you know, LeBron's out. You have the main dude in AD. If AD's shut down, you look at a guy like Westbrook, he could go off or he could just fall out. He had a major, major high in that first half, fell down in the second half, and then he ended up kind of going out in a gust of flames with that ejection at the end because he did not perform well to end it. I don't look at this Clippers team as lethal, to be honest with you. I think that Paul George can erupt, but if you kind of quiet him down, you're going to have to look at guys like Jackson, who, sure, they can go off, or a Bledsoe, and that's fine. If Reggie Jackson scores 30 points or Bledsoe drops 20-plus, good for them. They earn this win, but you don't want the stat line to look like Paul George drops 45 and then the Clippers escape with their second victory of the season. Absolutely not. So you lock down Paul George, your chances are legitimate, and I think it could be a 48-minute contest, and that's what you want to see with the OKC Thunder. And like I said, guys, this game will be played at 9:30 Central Standard Time, so it's going to be one of those late West Coast games, first one of the year, so stay up, stay ready, and get ready for tomorrow's pod, where I will give you all a recap. But other than that, though, guys, that is going to do it for today's episode. I thank you all for listening, and I will talk to you all next time. See ya.